The book is Charlie Chaplin versus America, when art, sex, and politics collided. Charlie Chaplin is a hugely successful Hollywood star. It's the 1920s. He's been twice married, and then he makes a movie with Paulette Goddard and falls in love with her, though I learned from Scott there's no marriage license to ever found, but they're married. That's the third marriage. And Charlie Chaplin has concepts that he picks up in a world tour in 31 to 32. I believe Paulette Goddard went along with him. And that becomes the movie Modern Times. Scott, what did Charlie see about the world with Paulette Goddard? And I believe there was one or more trips to Bali. What did he make of it?
Goddard was not with him on that tour. That was he met her right after he came back from the tour. What he saw was the worldwide depression. He'd only, even in the midst of the depression in America, Hollywood functioned. I mean, the times were tough. You had two movie studios basically go into Chapter 11, Paramount and RKO, but people were still working. It was not breadlines and soup kitchens as it was in New York City or Chicago, for instance. So the people that lived in Hollywood were sort of insulated from the worst aspects of the Depression. But when Chaplin took an 18-month tour around the world in 1931-32, he saw the worst aspects of the Depression, and he was absolutely stunned and appalled. It transcended even his own experiences in Victorian London, because what he saw was hopelessness in a way that he hadn't seen in Victorian London, because the English are you know, bustle about even at their worst. They tend to be optimistic. But what he saw was squalor and depression, a human depression, not just financial depression. And it really kind of focused him on social inequity in a way that nothing had before, because he hadn't been out of the country since 1921. He'd been working steadily from 1921 to 1931. So it was his first vacation in 10 years, essentially. And it was a revelatory experience. He wrote a book about it, about his world tour, which focused a lot on economics, which became a fascination of his and he pursued for a number of years. And it also focused him on what could be done to help people when government and business had both failed the populations, which is what led to essentially him making Modern Times, which I think is probably the film of his that the late film of his that survives the best for modern audiences.
Yes, Modern Times is again a series of social commentary. That's the way I'm going to say it generally. The scenes on the production line are vivid. Everybody has seen them. But the accidental picking up the red flag, that's brilliant, Scott. What did it mean to the audience at the time? Because we need now to meet the allegations against Charlie Chaplin as a communist.
Well, the FBI had opened a file on him. The predecessor of the FBI had opened a file on Chaplin in 1922 because he'd been attending some socialist meetings in Los Angeles with a friend of his named Rob Wagner, who was a socialist. And they'd opened a file on him, which went nowhere. They just opened the file and mentioned that he was attending these meetings. And he was not a fan of Will Hayes, who had been a cabinet member in the Harding administration and had somehow gotten lucky and was hired to run the Motion Picture Association of America, thereby avoiding the astonishing range of scandals of the Harding administration. And this was noted in the FBI file. And then basically the FBI file goes blank for a number of years, but picks up again in the late 1930s. With the release of Modern Times and with Chaplin's plans to make The Great Dictator. It was the business with the red flag in Modern Times was his way of, I think, acknowledging that he was regarded by people who maybe weren't really serious politically as becoming dangerously radicalized. And his pointing out that there was poppycock, that he was a very wealthy man by the 1930s, extremely wealthy man by the 1930s. He hadn't been hurt by the Depression because his brother, Sidney, had told him to get out of the stock market several months before the market crashed in October of 1929. So he didn't get damaged at all. The idea of a man as wealthy as Charlie Chaplin, who owned his own studio, financed his own films, and had an extremely conservative stock portfolio, which I enumerated in the book, being a dangerous radical was ludicrous on the face of it. And that was his way of creating a sight gag to point out how ludicrous it was.
Modern Times' female lead is Paulette Goddard. And Paulette Goddard is easy to like in the movies, and your book made me like her more. Orson Welles, she had a cash register for a brain. Wonderful.
Yeah, they were together for 10 years. They were never married. They told people they were married.
They claimed they were married in China. That was the way they beat the gossip, I guess.
Yeah, but no, they were never married. There is no marriage license. They went through a sham Mexican divorce, even though the lawyer, Chaplin's lawyer, who's handling the Mexican divorce, asked Chaplin's other lawyer in Los Angeles, since there's no marriage certificate, why are we doing this exactly? They were doing it. They were getting the divorce to give Paulette plausible deniability that, in fact, they had been married. Because if they hadn't been married, why did they get a divorce? Because she felt that if they just came out and said, well, we were just shacked up or just living together, it could negatively impact her career. Chaplin didn't care. If he was completely indifferent to matters like this, but he went through with it for Paulette's sake, because she had by this time had a burgeoning career at Paramount Pictures, and he went through with the sham divorce basically to give her some protective coloration.
Yes, I learned from you that Paulette Goddard was almost Scarlett O'Hara. I didn't know this.
She was choice number two behind Vivian Leigh, and the problem was there was some discomfort amongst the choice of who's going to play Scarlett O'Hara was a big deal in 1938, because everybody knew Selznick had bought the screen rights and he was testing dozens of actresses, and it became a real the testing of the actresses and who's going to get the part became a topic of general conversation. And Goddard was living with Chaplin at his house. And whether or not they were common law marriage, was a common law marriage, I never actually checked out how many years they had to be together to constitute a common law marriage, but they were living together as man and wife. So he ended up going with Vivian Leigh, who was a better choice because yeah. Vivian Leigh's a better actress. But what was not generally known at the time was the fact that Vivian Leigh was living with Laurence Olivier, whose divorce hadn't come through yet, nor had her divorce come through yet. They were also living in sin in Hollywood.
Hollywood
days. Nobody, it wasn't generally known that Vivian Leigh was living with Laurence Olivier, whereas it was generally known that Paulette Goddard was living with Chaplin. So that was one of the mitigating factors that provoked David Selznick to hire Vivian Leigh.
The Great Dictator. This is the transition from silent to speaking. And Charlie Chaplin was hesitant to have the tramp speak. In fact, the tramp never speaks. But there are two roles here played by Charlie Chaplin in The Great Dictator. One is Hinkle the Dictator. The other is the barber, who has just a few lines. Now, striking to me, I always guessed at this, but until I read your research, I didn't know. Chaplin and Hitler looked alike and were perceived as looking alike. Did Hitler imitate Charlie's mustache? Do we know?
We don't know that. We don't know that. It's a strange mustache to imitate. You wouldn't think that it would be an attractive choice, but it is the identical mustache. So it's not out of the realm of possibility.
It's very strange. The Great Dictator is a huge risk. Is this one that UA didn't want to distribute and Charlie had to put up money? I can't remember. Was that modern?
Well, Charlie financed all of his own pictures after 1918. He didn't accept any outside money because he believed that if he accepted outside money, he'd have to listen to somebody giving him their opinion about his script or the film or how they wanted to release it. And he simply wouldn't countenance such interference. He insisted on absolute autonomy. And the only way to maintain absolute autonomy was to use his own money. So all of his feature pictures, The Kid, The Gold Rush, City Lights, Modern Times, The Great Dictator, all of them, he self-financed. Even when he made City Lights and Modern Times in the 1930s, after sound had rolled in and talking pictures were ubiquitous, and he was the sole holdout in making silent movies. And he basically, the reason was he wasn't ready to give up the tramp, and he didn't think the tramp could talk. period. Because if as soon as the tramp opened his mouth and said a sentence, the tramp was English, because Chaplin had a soft English accent. Even though he'd been living in America since 1913, he still had a soft English accent. And thereby, he would limit the character's universality. And he believed in the character's universality. He believed that was part of the attraction of the character, that he was accepted as German in Germany, as French in France, as English in England. Actually, the character is English. He's very much an English construct. And he was American in America. So why would he give that up just to be au courant and make a sound picture? So he only gives up silent pictures when he makes the decision to stop playing the tramp after Modern Times. And even though he costumes the Jewish barber in The Great Dictator to look like the tramp, I mean, he's got the waistcoat and the baggy pants and the derby. The Jewish barber is much more passive a character than the tramp ever was. The tramp is always standing up for himself and for other people and kicking cops in the butt and running away and creating havoc if he has to, in order to foment his independence and the independence of those he loves. The Jewish barber is much more passive. So there is an alteration in the character. I don't know that he actually thought of the Jewish barber as identical to the tramp. I'm inclined to doubt it. But costuming the character in the same clothes as the tramp, I think, was his way of making a gesture to the audience that he hadn't completely rejected the character.
The book is Charlie Chaplin versus America, When Art, Sex, and Politics Collided. Scott Amon is the author. I'm John Batch.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.